We could calm down after that heated discussion we had over the genre, how to model genre. So we come back into our conference room and we have this picture on the board. And it is time now to turn this into a database schema, a database model. And we're going to use more sophisticated capabilities of the database as we do this. Because we have to take these arrows, and we have to take these arrows where we connect from an album to a genre, from a track to a genre or a track to an album. We got to come up with a way to represent them in the database. The database doesn't have arrows, and so we use numbers to represent the arrows. Right? We still need to keep track of who made who, or AC/DC, or greatest hits, or whatever. We just can't use strings to do this. And so the thing we just got done doing is called database normalization. And we're going to replace these duplicate strings with little numbers. We're going to come up with a code. It's a thing programmers might naturally do. Okay, AC/DC is 1, and Led Zeppelin is 2. So when we're not allowed to replicate strings, we'll just go, 1, 1. We'll put 2 1s in there. Now, we don't write our program so that you have to change the source code every single time. So we actually put these numbers in the database itself. And we actually use the database to create these numbers for us. And so we add this special column to the tables called the ID column. The name of it is convention. It's common to call it ID. We call it the key, the primary key. And so what we do is, instead of in an album, who made who, instead of putting AC/DC here, we have another little table that says ACD is number 2. So if we're looking at this album and we want to know which artist it is, we have to go over to the artist table and look up number 2, and then we get back AC/DC. And this is number 1, and so that's Led Zeppelin. So first we make like these artist tables and get these numbers, and then as we're putting albums in, we use those numbers. And that's how the connection works. We use these numbers to connect between two tables. So this is just what we call the integer reference pattern. And this sort of gets us to the notion of keys. When we put a row into a table, each row gets its own index. That's how we reference the other data in the row. And we call that thing the primary key. By convention, in all the stuff I'm going to do, I call that ID. I stole that convention from a technology called Ruby on Rails that always has the row key be ID. Another key that's important that we use to look things up is what's called the logical key. And the logical key is what the outside world uses to look up this same data. And so there, I might have some kind of a user number. So if I'm in Coursera, for example, I look and I've got this number. My ID is like 127,326. My name is csev@umich.edu. My logical key is csev@umich.edu because that's kind of what the world sees me. But internally, everything that I do is this 126,000 yada yada. So the primary key is just this number that the system assigns to your record in the user table or whatever. And so the logical key is what it uses to look you up. Now, it's tempting to just go use csev@umich.edu as the key everywhere in the system. But unfortunately, our names sometimes change. Our email addresses sometimes change. So has anyone in here changed your Kerberos account? Yeah, so there are a couple things. One, you might get married or divorced, right? Or you might have gotten a Kerberos name that because they kind of threw your first name and last name together, that turned out to be a word that you didn't want to be associated with your entire time here. And so people will walk in the third week and say, you know what? I don't want to be called dummy@umich.edu my whole career, right? And so and so you can go to a place on campus and you can ask to have your name changed. They don't like you to do this very often. And the way it works is, inside CTools, your unique name only appears one place. And when you go and change your unique name, they actually have a list of all the major applications on campus. And they call them all up and say, oop, CSEV just became Dr. Chuck. and then CTools has to make one tiny little change because it only got the logical key of CSEV one place in CTools, and the rest of the places are all using this primary key. So it might seem like CSEV is a very permanent thing. It's mostly permanent and hardly ever changes, but it's not permanent. When we have an integer column that's used to reference a row in some other table, we call that a foreign key. The primary key is the key of this row, of this table, and we have a column that's a foreign key, which is another table. So as I mentioned, you don't want to ever use your logical key as your primary key because they do change. And this notion of these foreign keys that connect tables together are very efficient. They take less space than strings, and they compare much faster than strings. So a foreign key in one table points to the primary key of a row in a different table. Okay. So let's start making ourselves some tables. So we start with this picture, and we've got track that has rating, length. We have track title, rating, length, and count. Then we have two connections. And we have like album. Album connects to artist. Artist is by itself, and album has to point to artist. So what we do is we take this sort of logical picture, track, title, rating, length, and count, and we make a table called track. And then we add a primary key to it. That's the ID field. And then we have the title. We just know that that's our logical key. Rating, length, and count are just data that kind of drags along. And then in order to represent the arrow, we put one more column in called album ID, which is a number, which is a foreign key that points to the album table. And the album only has a title, so we have a primary key of ID, which kind of makes up the little numbers for the albums, and then title. Okay? And so we add these things, you know, title, rating, length, and count were just part of the data we want to represent. But ID and album ID are things that we added just so that we can capture these relationships. Album ID is kind of the start of the arrow, and then ID is the end of the arrow. And so it's a pretty mechanical thing, and if you keep doing this, you end up with a picture that looks like this. You have, because we had two links out of track, end up with an album ID and a genre ID. The genre just has a name and it's got an ID. Albums have IDs, titles, and then there's an artist, that's a number, the purple artist ID is a number, that picks up an artist. So this is a pretty mechanical conversion where you just add these ID fields, add the foreign key fields, and the rest of it just kind of comes along. Any questions? Okay. So, we can create a table. So I'm going to create another table in my little database guy. And we'll just leave users in there. I'm going to create a table called artist, and it's going to have an ID and a name. New table. I'm going to make a table called artist. And the first column is going to be an ID column. And it's going to be an integer. And I'm going to do some checkboxes here. I'm going to say that's my primary key. Auto inc stands for auto increment. And what I'm saying there is, I am not even going to make these numbers up, dear database. Dear database, I want you to make these numbers up for me. Just pick one. Because really all I'm looking for is a number that I'll use later. So you get to pick the numbers for me. Auto increment means it'll generates the numbers for me. It's a column. And unique means I want all of the ID numbers to be unique in this column. So I can't have 12 mapping to two different artists. And then artist is name, got an artist name. And that's going to just be text. So that's the same way. So this ID is special. It's a primary key. We're asking it to be auto-generated by the database, and we want it to be unique. And as we're doing this, building this data model, we are making a contract with the database, saying these are the kinds of things I'm going to put in these columns, and these are the kind of things I'm going to expect from you, the database. Oh, and by the way, I'm giving you lots of hints if you want to come up with clever ways to represent this data internally that are not my problem. They're your problem, but you will do nice stuff. So I create this table, and you see the create tables syntax there. And I say yes. So now you see I have two tables. And I have artist. And then I'm going to start inserting data in because I'm starting to retrieve tracks from the user interface. Now we're going to do this in very, very slow motion. Usually you'll have an application where you typing all the data in and it starts inserting into all four of these tables. And it kind of inserts from the outer edges in, because to insert the album you got to know the artist ID. So you have to look up the artist or create the artist, then you know what the ID is for the artist, and then you can make the album. So you kind of work from the outer edges in as you insert these things, because you need to get the keys, the primary keys that they are all creating. Okay, so the first thing we're going to, then before we do that, we're going to make all the other tables. And we're going to make them by hand. And so we have this syntax that's create table genre, ID is integer primary key, auto increment not null, unique. That's all of that is telling the database what I'm going to do with that ID field. And then I have a name. Now I conveniently have these all typed in somewhere. So I'm going to type in, yeah. Got those in my Word document. They're down here. So we've already made the artist table. No. Yeah. So we make the album table. So I just copy that one. And I go over. And I make the album table. Oh, already had that one. Then I make, what do I have? Make the artist table. Create table artist. Oh, already got that. Then I got the genre. And then the last one is the track. And the track's kind of long. But it really is just the ID, the big long thing is integer ID auto increment, not null unique. That's saying it's my primary key. Then I got the album ID, the genre ID, which are the foreign keys. And then I got my date of length, rating, title, and count. So now I have four tables that represent the data model that we just got done creating. Users is still sitting there, but we're not going to use users anymore. So now I want to fill it with data. Well, let me stop. Any questions? Okay. So now I'm going to insert data, and this is sort of an important step. I insert sort of from the outside in, and I'm going to insert in the artist table. And I'm going to insert an artist with the name of Led Zeppelin. What I'm not inserting is the ID field, because I asked the database to automatically generate the ID field for me. So now if I go into artist, if I go into artist, you will see that I've got Led Zeppelin here. That's what I put in. But here's this ID field. That's what it put in. Okay, it put the ID field in for me. I didn't make it up. I permit it to pick any number it wanted. Not surprisingly, being like a computer, it picked one. And you can pretty much guess what the next one it's going to pick is going to be. Two is correct. So now I'm going to insert AC/DC. Again, without telling it what number to pick. Now it turns out when you're running this like in Python, you can ask, what number did you just pick? So that when you go over here, you see that AC/DC is now two. So now, every time for the rest of this application's life, every time we want to indicate that a album belongs to AC/DC, we just put 2 in, because 2 equals AC/DC. Now these numbers will be different. Like on your computer, depending on what albums you rip first, number one might be something different than on my computer, but it doesn't matter. These numbers are only for my computer to represent AC/DC. So if AC/DC is the ninth album you rip, it'll have a number 9 in your computer, but it doesn't matter, right? Because those numbers are all kind of internal. Both have AC/DC somewhere. They'll both have a number, but there could be a different number. Okay? So the next thing we're doing, kind of working from the outside in, is we're going to insert rock. Insert rock, and then I will insert metal. And if I go take a look at the genre, it picked 1 and 2. So there's going to be 1 and 2 in each table, because this is the row number 1 in the genre table, and the other thing was row number 1 in the artist table. So every time we want to say rock, we use 1. And that's why it's important in the track table to know what your genre ID or a track ID or whatever, because these aren't global numbers. They're sort of within the table numbers. Okay, so that's, we have now created the artist and the genre, and now we're working our way in. Now at this point, there is no really easy automatic way to fix the artist ID on an album. So we just have to remember that AC/DC is 2 and Led Zeppelin is 1. So when we're inserting, we've got to put those numbers in. This is the first example of a foreign key. Everything we've done so far is a primary key, and the primary key is automatically generated for us. So I had to know the artist ID of AC/DC is 2. So this is like saying I'm inserting Who Made Who for AC/DC. But instead of saying AC/DC, I just say 2, because that is a little integer field. And then I know that Led Zeppelin is 1, and so I put in Led Zeppelin 4, and that has a 1. So if I look at album, right, you see there is a primary key that is the row within albums, and then there is a foreign key of which artist this belongs to. That's the lookup. So you have to go to artist to figure out who artist 2 is. Oh, artist 2 is AC/DC. If I go back to album, got to look up artist 1. Well, artist 1 is Led Zeppelin. So we have to manually put the foreign key value. So our program or whatever has got to know what those numbers are to make the connection. The far end of the connection, the ID field of the destination, that's automatically generated. But the sort of the starting point of our arrow, we have to put that number in and know what that number is. So that's our first foreign key. Any questions? Okay, we're almost done. We're about to put in the super awesome gigantic one. So here we go. Here is an insert statement. Now it looks like nasty, but really it's just an insert, and there's parentheses, title, rating, length, count. Those are the things we're putting in, you know, and that's just the first bits. And now we have the foreign key for the album and the foreign key for the genre, and we know that the album is 2 and the genre is 1. Okay? So we just put them in. And we just type them in. Every place we would put an album or a genre title, we put the number in instead. And again, we have to remember what these numbers are, and they have to be right. So I'll just go over and run that SQL. Just come back. So I run that SQL, and now I have, not album. I have one track. So again, this ID, auto-generated, album ID and genre ID were things that I kept track of, because that's on album serial number 2 and genre serial number 1. Then length and rating and title and count are just kind of stuff that I'm dragging along. So let me insert the rest of these guys. Oops, come back. Insert this one. Insert this one. Uh-oh. That didn't work so well. So at least it's still working. So I'm doing 4 inserts here. So now if I look at the album table, I mean the track table. So I got all the, I put all four in, and we got the two foreign keys, album ID and genre ID, and away we go. And so we have now, without ever duplicating the string AC/DC or Led Zeppelin or what are the albums again? Who Made Who or Four? We never duplicated the strings twice. Anytime we've had to duplicate, we duplicate the numbers. So these are both AC/DC. Well, those are both metal. Those are both rock. This is both AC/DC, and that's Led Zeppelin. So we allow the duplication of numbers in columns. That's allowed. But strings are not. So we followed the rules. So we went to a lot of effort to follow the rules and never put a string in twice. So now we have these relationships, right? We can, if we want to know what album it is, we can go look it up. And if we want to know the artist for that album, we can look it up. And so to sort of reconstruct all the data, we've got to go look through all these tables now. We were following the rules that we were told we had to follow that said you couldn't put the string Who Made Who in more than once. Even though there's two tracks that have Who Made Who, this string is only one place in our entire database. The number two is as many times as it likes. Similarly, the album number one. Well, yeah. Okay? So that's we reached our goal. Any duplication within a column is only a number. No strings are allowed to be duplicated. So now we've done all this, and we want to actually reconstruct our data. So again, we exploded into these little tiny things with these numbers that link everything together almost like links on the web. And now we want to reconstruct them and put them all back together. Thankfully, and this is the real power of a database, is there's this thing called join, which automatically reconnects this stuff. And so that we built a web of data with these little number pointers that go back and forth. And now we're going to reconstruct that data. And we want to take the foreign keys and go link them back to the primary keys and pull the data all together. So the join operation, everything we've done with the select so far is from one table. Now we're going to select from more than one table. And we're going to define how we want those tables to be connected together in the ultimate data that we're asking for. And that's in what's called an on clause. So the two things we're going to see now is a join keyword and an on clause. And so if we are just trying to reassemble the artist name and the album name, we're going to write a select statement. Select, SQL keyword, album.title, that's saying table.column, artist.name, from, that's a SQL keyword, album is a table, but now we want two tables. So we want to join to album, we want to reconnect these things. Album joined to artist. So we want to connect the rows in album to the rows in artist. And on is like a where clause. And it says, I want to be the case that when the column artist ID in the album table is equal to the ID column in the artist table. So this is like, reconnect these things back together. So this is an act of reconnecting them back together. Any questions? So we even thought of us to split them apart, and now we are going to reconnect them back together.
So basically, album artist ID and artist ID, since they're actually the same thing, that's where they connect.
Well, no, they're not the same thing, but we want to have the same value.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now it basically looked up. In effect, you could think of this as taking that one and the two and then looking it up in the artist table and putting the artist name there instead of the one and the two. Okay? So it's like a lookup. I don't want to just show me artist ID. Matter of fact, I could ask this. I could say, show me the album.artist ID, comma, and you'd see the artist ID. It's there, but it also like looked up the artist's name for us all in one big statement. Okay? Artist ID, and then it looked it up. As a matter of fact, if I say artist.id, which is the primary key of the artist, and I run this again, this stuff here is the album table, and this stuff here is the artist table. And what I really said is, I want to connect the rows from, I want to sort of concatenate the rows from the artist table onto the album table when those two things match. The on clause insists that those two things match. And it turns out, if I take the on clause out, it's going to graph these two tables together, all combinations of the two tables, give us all the combinations of every row in the artist, the album title, and every row in the album title. And that's what a join does, kind of without the on clause. And the on clause says, oh great, you've done that. I really only want the ones where these two things match. So the on clause effectively is throwing away the combinations that don't match. The join is like all possible combinations, and the on clause is only the combinations that match. So if I put the where clause back, the on clause back in, then that throws away the ones that don't match. So that is it's like looking up. It's a way of expressing looking up in one table. You could almost think about like the artist table is like a dictionary, and ID is the key, and name is the value. And we're looking up, saying, oh, go get me artist sub 2 or artist sub 1. The join is kind of like that. It's like, go look up in that other dictionary where I got all those things that I put in earlier. Okay? Any questions? Yeah? We'll see that in the next one. But you're right. If you had multiple albums by the same artist, it would reconnect it twice. Because it would find the two rows would have twos in them. The next one will see that. Yeah?
Is there a command for adding like a new column, a new value?
Well, do you mean adding to a table so you can put more stuff in? Or in a select step. So select is really just viewing what's already there.
No, I mean putting more things like, oh, what did we have in here? If the track has to have a title, the rating, the length.
Yep.
Count. If you decided that you wanted to put like one more attribute in there.
Yes. Okay. You can do that. That's called alter table. You actually can do it right in this user interface by adding a new thing. New thing. Let's put it the date. Add column. And it would say alter table, add a column. And what's cool about it is the database, you could do this on the CTools database right now. And it'd be running. Data be coming and going, and that column would boop, pop up. Right? So these databases are like amazingly capable of handling data coming from lots of different directions at the same time. I won't do it, but you certainly can add data, add columns dynamically. You can even change them. Make them shorter, you can make them longer. It's really extremely smart. It's why Larry Ellison has a nice boat. Okay, so the join allows us to get data from more than one table and then specify a condition upon which you want rows connected from two tables. So I already showed you this. Yeah, so we do the same thing. Select the track title and the genre name from track, join to genre, where the track's genre ID is equal to the genre's ID, which is representing that arrow that connects to the genre ID. So it's looking up in genre. So now you're going to see this reduplication. because we've got two albums that are rock and two albums that are metal. The join will regenerate the duplicate data. So if I run this join, you will see that it regenerates the duplicate data. The data is not in the database, but it's setting it up for the user interface. So we have the database create the exact user interface that we want to show. Because the user interface we started with has replicated data in it. We just don't want to store it. We have to construct it at the moment we're going to see it. Okay, so this is an example where you see two tracks that have genre rock, two tracks have genre metal. The join sort of makes two copies of that row in genre as needed, or as many copies as it needs to be. Yeah?
What if it with the lag table, select from three tables?
That's what we're going to do next. We're going to do four. Right now we're doing two, but we don't stop there. Any questions with two? Let's just do four. Okay. So it can get complex. So we're joining across four tables now, and we're going to reconstruct all data with all the duplicates now. And this looks complex, but because of the fact that I've named all my database columns in a very consistent manner, I can almost type this as fast as I can think. Because I would like to select the title from the track, the name of the artist, the album's title, and the genre's name from the track, connected to the genre, connected to the album, connected to the artist. I want all four tables. On is when I want the connections to happen. Well, I want the track's genre ID to be equal to the genre's ID. And I would like the track's album ID to be the album's ID. And I want the album's artist ID to be the same as the artist ID. I mean, it's just like follow all the links and put the stuff all back together. I mean, when I made it to be put back together. And the fact is kind of going from this table and it kind of goes off this way, we just tell it what we want and the conditions upon which we want it. And so I'll just cut and paste this monstrous stuff. Oops. Well. So I put this join in and I run the SQL. And now you get duplicates all over the place. We got duplicate our name, we got duplicate title, we got duplicate genres, but it's okay because the data is not duplicated. We are just producing this data for the brief moment to show the user interface. And now it looks exactly like what the user interface looked like. All right, we sort of blew it into its little fragments and then we used join to reassemble the little fragments. Now if I quickly take off this on clause, you will see kind of this combinatoric explosion. It's every row combined with every row, combined with every row, combined with every row, all possible combinations of all possible rows, and then the on clause discards them. So that's like every genre with everything, but then the on clause says, no, I don't want all of them. I just want the ones where they match according to the definition of how I put them back together. Okay? Any questions? So the naming of this stuff is really, really helpful because if you ever go into an organization and they've got different names than the ones you're used to, you just got to use the names that they use. There'll be rules and naming conventions. There'll probably be a document like how we name columns here. Right? You'll be like, okay, I'm going to memorize this because you could argue with them and say that's a bad way of naming columns, but it's not going to work very well because they've been doing it for a long time. Okay, so again, we've gotten back with this join. We've blown the stuff out and then we rejoin it back together. And it looks pretty much like what we want it to look like in the first place. And now we can build our application, except that it'll be fast, right? So why do we waste all of this energy to take what seems simple enough and make it complex? Well, it's fast. But it's fast, it's not like a little faster, right? It's the difference between an hour and a quarter of a 1 hour and 1/4 of a second in C tools. Right? So it's frankly not a choice. It's not like, an hour to log in, it wouldn't be too bad. And we don't want to spend any time in a meeting at all. I mean, why would we spend like an hour in a meeting to come up with a data model to make it a quarter of a second? It seems like a lot of work. We'll just have everybody wait an hour to log in. So it's really not an option, right? You can't build a system like cTools unless you are really good at doing data modeling. And unless you like just turn every little crank and you end up with these rather complex beasts of data models that end up with these great big pictures of stuff. And Sakai's picture is very large, and we will argue with each other if we have slightly bad data models, because if we don't, it slows down terribly. So it's not really a trade-off if you're going to deal with a lot of data. And you might even find that if you're doing something even moderately large on your desktop, where you're not even doing an online application, using a database, and we'll see this when we do the PageRank stuff, et cetera, where it'll start to slow down. By the end of the semester, I will give you so much data that your computer will slow down, and you'll see the slow part and the fast part. And it'll be like 20 times faster just like that, because we've got the data modeled and organized in a really good way. You think, well, what's the big deal? Well, how about if we're going to look through a gigabyte of data? Well, that'll slow your computer down a little bit. But if I can organize the gigabyte of data and split it and model it well, then the stuff you do afterwards is really fast. So, I just finished teaching you undergraduate class in database. Taught you about database modeling. You are now not qualified to be a database administrator, but you're qualified to have a really good coffee shop conversation with a database administrator. And I just want to let you know the parts that I didn't talk about. So there's a couple topics that are kind of interesting. The first topic that I skipped in this was the notion of indexes. So logical keys are like the parts where you type CSEV and you've got to look that thing up. There is ways to speed up the lookup. So sometimes, for example, you create an index on a text string that is designed to sort it very effectively. Like maybe a last name and first name, you'd want to be sortable. But something like a Kerberos account, like CSEV, you don't even need that sortable. So you have one index for things that aren't sortable and a different kind of index. And all you really do is you tell the database, like, hey, this is their user ID, their Kerberos ID. I'm going to do a lot of lookups, but I don't need to sort it. And they'll be like, thank you very much. I'll organize it in a different way. I have all kind of clever ways to organize the data. Or you'll say, this is the person's last name, and I'm going to sort this a lot. And be like, ooh, I got a different way to organize that. So indexes are another thing where we're making a contract with them, cluing them in the kind of ways we're going to look data up. Another thing that's different is a constraint. And a constraint is, again, a form of a contract where you say, look, I don't want any duplicate stuff in this column. So this column, I want it unique. Which means if you insert something a second time, it'll blow up because you said, I'm only going to put unique stuff in here. But it also then, once it's you've given it that contract, it can speed up. So all the time that you make these contracts, you're giving it hints to make it go faster and faster. And our whole goal is to take database engines and make them really fast. Transactions is another interesting aspect. And transactions solve the problem of that banks have when you cleverly have $100 in your savings account and you have two ATM cards and you and your friend go to two ATM machines at the same time and you attempt to withdraw $100 at the exact same time and have your bank account only go down by $100. Because if you can do that, you could get rich, right? And the problem is that one ATM gets your old balance, says, oh, that's $100, and the other ATM gets your old balance, and then one ATM subtracts 100 and puts up zero, and the other ATM subtracts 100 and puts up zero, and you walk out with $200 bills, and then you meet back together, and the bank goes like, what just happened? All right? So transactions basically are a way of locking a group of things together that basically say, oh, the first ATM's got the balance, which means that they might change it, so we're going to lock the balance for the moment. So this ATM goes like, I want to get the balance. It's like, hang on. You just hang on a second. And then the first ATM takes the money out, updates the balance, and then it unlocks the row. And then the second ATM gets a balance of zero, and you're foiled in your plot to get an extra $100. So transactions are this notion of locking a bit of data so that you can do two steps. The first step is reading it, and the second step is changing it. And you have to do that as a unit. So transactions sort of bracket two steps and say, look, Nothing can happen to that row in between the two things I'm going to do on that row. So transactions are really cool. In my SI 664 class, I could have given let you play with this. I made a rock, paper, scissors game. And so the problem with rock, paper, scissors is I made it so the whole class can play rock, paper, scissors. But the way rock, paper, scissors works is the first person who plays effectively creates half of a game. And then they have to wait until another person plays to create the other half of the game. But if one person creates half a game and then two people hit the play button at the same time, you've got to have only one person complete the game because it's got to be pairs of people, and then the next person's got to start a new game, right? So if you have one person starts a game, two people play, one of them gets to connect to the game that exists, and then they start the second one starts a second game. So I use transactions in that application to make sure the moment where I've picked a game for you to play and I've recorded that you finished that game, I've got to lock the game while I'm doing that. And that's what a transaction does. So this is the kind of stuff we talk about a lot in SI 664. So we talk about these things, indexes and transactions and constraints. And if I was to look at some SI 664 stuff, so we were doing create table statements, right? Oops, that's not what I want. Well, that might be something they just put in the table. But like checking a book out is a good example of something it's kind of like a number that you're changing. Let's see. Oh, let me show you the rock, paper, scissors one. So we did this create table statement. We were doing create table statements in this class. Create table, table name, and then a bunch of columns with a bunch of rules. And so this is a SI 664 create table statement. Got a bunch of things, and I got these foreign keys, and I got an index, and I got a unique constraint. All these things are things that I'm telling it in greater detail about how this particular table fits in with all the other tables in this application. So you don't have to do that. It's a little ad for SI 664. If you think this is fascinating and you want to be a database person, SI 664 is where we talk about this in more great detail. So, yeah.
What are some personal, like I see the professional uses of databases, but what's things that you might use in your personal life?
Well, so how about if I answer that for your life here at SI?
Okay.
And maybe let's say you're going to do some research. You will do an application in 2 weeks, or maybe it's next week, searching, that you literally couldn't do without a database. And it has to do with the fact that when the data you're working with gets really large, it's kind of like what happens with Excel, with spreadsheets, right? Spreadsheets can do so much, and when that thing starts to blow up and your machine crashes, then you kind of switch to Python. And the Python is capable of doing a certain kind of amount of work in a minute that your patience is willing to handle. And so if it turns out that you got 200,000 email messages and you're going to scan through and look for something, you will be patient if it takes a minute to read that, right? Because everything we've done has taken half a second at the most. But if I made it bigger, it'd take maybe a minute. You'd be fine. I'll just run it and I'll wait and I'll grab a cup of coffee if it's a minute. But if that became 10 minutes or 20 minutes or 30 minutes, then you'd say, you know what? I'm going to run through this once and make a database once, and I'm going to get myself back under 30 minutes back down to 30 seconds or 5 seconds, right? And so what we're going to see in the next application, I think next week's the search, right? Is next week's search? Yeah. So I'm going to give you, I think, 3/4 of a gigabyte of search data of web pages that have been crawled off the web. To crawl the web, to crawl 3/4 of a gigabyte of data off the web took me 5 days. Now, you could crawl over and over and over again, but that would mean to run the question you want to ask would take you 5 days just to get the data. And then what I do is I crawl it into an unstructured database, 3/4 of a gigabyte, and then you turn it into a clean database depending on how fast your computer is, reading the nasty database can take anywhere from like 5 minutes to like 30 minutes. So you're reading this 1 3/4 of a gigabyte web data, 30 minutes, making a really clean database that's using, instead of email addresses, or it's email, instead of email addresses, it's using numbers. Like the simple thing of like, it's not an email address anymore, it's a number. Now I can join stuff back together and I can use all these things. And all of a sudden, it takes 15 seconds to do something that took 5 days, then it took 20 minutes, then it took 15 seconds. And it's just, at some point you get impatient. 5 days is not fast enough, especially if you ask the same question over and over and over again. And so that's, so you, but then you have to write a little software. So we've already read 20 web pages and you can be patient on that. And if you had to restart it, you'd go back and read the 20 pages again because that'd be okay because I slid a minute. But if I said read 20,000 pages, that'd be different. And so that's when you start saying, wow, I can't just put this in a dictionary. I've got to put it in a database. And then you got to make the database faster and faster and faster. Depends on the size of the data. So probably don't need it for your video collection. Because that you probably can put just in a file and search it in Microsoft Word or Excel. So, okay. So everything that we've done here, which is exactly the question that you just asked,